And the first order of business is to review and approve the minutes from the February 15th, 2017 meeting. Is there a motion to that effect?
So move.
Senator Dames moves approval of the minutes. Discussion on that motion? They're in your packet if you haven't had a chance to review them. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of approval of the minutes from the February 15th, 2017 meeting signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. And the next order of business is to consider establishment of a subcommittee related to the state ethnic councils. Mr. Hubinger, I think you'll tell us a little bit about that. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, Greg Hubinger from the LCC. In your packet is a resolution that would establish a subcommittee on ethnic councils. Just to briefly review the history, in 2015, the legislature restructured the three state ethnic councils for African Heritage, Asian Pacific, and Latino Affairs. That was a result of a review or study by the Office of the Legislative Auditor that recommended changes. The changes largely changed or narrowed the focus of the three councils, and also as a way to increase the relationship between these councils and the legislature. The legislation provided for the LCC to establish or to appoint the directors of these three executive branch agencies. That legislation was adopted. There was a search process that was closely integrated between the council and nonpartisan staff. The LCC met in November of 2015 and appointed the three current directors. With respect to the current resolution that you have, the LCC has delegated several of its responsibilities to other groups to carry out its work. It did that for the Employee Relations Subcommittee, an Administrative Rules Subcommittee, and others. And in the same vein, as a way to facilitate this work, there's a proposal to establish a subcommittee on ethnic councils that would be made up of the four caucus directors, the caucus leaders. The caucus leaders could appoint a designee to carry out that responsibility. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Members, the resolution is in your packets. It is designated LCC-1. Questions for Mr. Hubinger? Would someone make a motion to move that resolution?
I'll move that motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoppe moves the LCC-1 resolution. Discussion on the resolution? Or questions for Mr. Hubinger? No? All those in favor of adoption of the LCC-1 resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Next is item number three on the agenda is the resolution LCC-2, a resolution considering for the House and Senate to retain outside counsel.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the LCC-2.
Senator Gazelka moves the LCC-2 resolution. Discussion on the resolution. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Speaker, I understand that you're unhappy that the tactic that you employed in your legislation to hold state employees hostage to raise a public policy debate has been turned against you by the governor, and that very same tactic has now been used to accomplish having a conversation about items in the budget, policy items and budget items. And I think it's premature for the Legislative Coordinating Commission to hire attorneys when it's my understanding from both you and from the governor on Minnesota Public Radio earlier this morning that you haven't even begun to discuss negotiating the disagreement that you presently have. In your public safety bill, in order to accomplish your objective of inserting a controversial issue into state law, you threatened the very continued funding of the Department of Corrections, the courts, and the Department of Public Safety. And now the governor has used that tactic of unfunding the legislature to raise the discussion on that issue. So if it was okay for you, I don't know why you would think it's not okay for him to use the exact same tactic. In the tax bill, in order to get the special interest tax exemptions, a substantial tax cut for tobacco companies, and a substantial tax cut for commercial and industrial properties that the state can't afford, you, in your state government finance bill, inserted a clause that you would shut down the Department of Revenue and have 1,300 employees out in order to accomplish your objectives. And now that very same tactic has been used against you to raise that issue for public discussion. In the E-12 finance bill, in order to push through your version of teacher licensure reform, rather than accommodate the changes that the governor sought, you threatened funding for all of our state school districts and the Department of Education and all those employees who are supported by those expenditures in order to have the discussion on that public policy issue. And what the governor has done by defunding the legislature, he didn't dissolve the legislature, let's not engage in hyperbole, he defunded us. We're perfectly capable of meeting without getting paid. He turned these same exact tactics against you, and now you object to these tactics. They're the ones that you've employed all session, and I would think that you shouldn't be all that surprised that they're being employed by the chief executive that you employed those tactics against.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hortman, let me first of all say that I think I have a good working relationship with the governor and with you. And all five of the issues that he objected to, we did agree to. That didn't mean that he was favorable towards them, but in the give and take of what we were doing, those were all accepted, full disclosure, looking through them as they were. And as we moved into this phase, I have sought to find a possible off-ramp not to go this direction. I know you have as well, but not to the five that we already agreed to, but perhaps something else. But we couldn't find that. And so in the end, it really left us no choice but to move forward with this step for legal action. And this is not a place we want to be, but for us, this is not an issue of Democrats versus Republicans, but the governor versus the House and Senate. We really see no other option or no other thing, but this is unconstitutional, that it's a violation of the separation of powers and that we have to be able to function. And even in the interim, we're the voice of the people. We are the ones that are out in our districts talking to the constituents, and our staff members are there answering their questions. We're the ones that are out there and in touch. And so that's why we felt like we had no choice. The House and Senate is not just Republicans, it's Republicans and Democrats. The families that are impacted are both stripes. You know, there's over, I believe, 500 employees that will be impacted. And so, you know, both the Speaker and I have said we're not going to penalize the Democrats in the House and the Senate, because this is an issue between the House and Senate versus the governor. And so as we move forward with this, you know, our nonpartisan staff in the Senate helped us. I believe they interviewed at least six different firms, and this is the direction that we've felt that we should go. I know, you know, the House and the Senate agree, you know, with the direction we're going, but this is not something we wanted to do, nor is it something we take lightly. But for the protection of the three branches of government, in this case the House and Senate, we felt like we had no other option.
I'd also like to add, Representative Hortman, that you know, your comments about language that was put into the state government finance bill being somehow similar to what the governor's doing here. If the governor didn't like what was in the state government finance bill or didn't like what was in the tax bill, he still had his constitutional right to veto those bills. And he chose not to do that. He chose to instead line item veto the funding for the entire legislature, which will not allow us to do our job. I would love to say that all of us legislators are incredibly capable, but we're not going to look very capable if we have no staff backing us up. And our staff is so wonderful, both our partisan and nonpartisan staff, and they do such a great job for us, that I think this is just a really unfortunate example of the governor overreaching and trying to use some political game and tying up all of these nonpartisan staff and their families into this, really unfortunate. And frankly, if the governor hadn't personally agreed to all five of those things, I think he would have a better argument as to why he was doing this. But he literally personally agreed to every one of those things during the course of negotiations, and now wants to renegotiate and apply leverage by literally taking away all of our staff. This is a blatant example of executive branch overreach and trying to punitively punish a what he calls a co-equal branch of government. I'll also add, I was actually moved by the governor's standing up for the legislative branch. When the Chief Justice came to us and asked for 3% raises both of the next 2 years for the judges and the staff and the legislative branch, and the governor brought her request fully forward, saying, you know what, she's a separate co-equal branch of government. Those were his words. And it's not my job to question whether or not she needs that money. It's my job to advocate that she understands what she needs. She's asking for it, and we should live up to that. I actually thought that was very moving. I don't know what changed and why the governor doesn't think all of a sudden that the legislature deserves that same kind of respect, but I can only imagine that the answer to that question is tied up in political games. And I think Minnesotans expect better of our governor.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hortman.
I can count, so I know I will be outvoted on this premature motion to spend hard-earned taxpayer dollars on litigation when you haven't even tried the cheaper, quicker method of actually talking to the governor to resolve your disputes. But I have to just strongly disagree with your characterization of the factual events. The press conference that you had when you indicated for a second time you were leaving the negotiating table and you were going your own way and you would send the bills whether he liked them or not. The governor was at his cousin's funeral, which you knew. And you indicated to the governor at that time that you would try to work with them, but whether he liked what was in those bills or not, you were sending them. And so the governor had two choices at that point in time. And one was to engage and try to get those bills as good as they could be. And two was to disengage and let you send another batch of bills that were wholly bad. So his engagement is in no way acquiescence to your stepping away from the negotiating table a second time, and he was very clear with you when you did step away from the negotiating table that what he was doing was working to make the best of a situation that you had created. And to now imply to the public that somehow the governor has individually agreed is just wrong. You yourself have indicated publicly on several occasions he never gave you any assurances he was going to sign any of those bills. He maybe in negotiations agreed that you each had gotten to the point where you weren't listening to his commissioners and he had gotten as far as he could get. But you yourself indicated he had never made any assurances to you of what he would sign or veto. So I think that that mischaracterization has to be corrected on the public record. But again, Mr. Speaker, I can count. And I understand that you would rather spend hard-earned taxpayer dollars on litigation than trying to work with the governor. And I think that is unfortunately why we find ourselves here, that at each turn in the legislative session, when there's an opportunity to negotiate and try to find a collaborative solution or to engage and fight and send things to the governor that he disagrees with, you have chosen the option of engaging and fighting. And I think that Minnesotans are tired of that, and they know there's a different way to do this, that there is a possibility of people getting along and having honest give and take and keeping their word that they make to one another and abiding by agreements that they sign. And I think Minnesotans will be disappointed to see their hard-earned taxpayer dollars spent on litigation when no attempt has been made to reach an agreement short of litigation.
Yeah. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hortman. First of all, I have reached out to the governor more than once with in-depth conversations trying to find some way through. And I didn't feel like we had any choice at this point. And the governor knew we were meeting here at 11:45, and this next step was to seek legal counsel. July 1 is not that far away, and that's why as we're moving through this, we can't wait any longer. The families of the House and Senate are counting on us. We cannot wait. The bond rating of the Senate building, if we don't have money to pay for that, you know, that's going to affect that as well. That's part of what's impacted here. But I do want to come back to those five issues. We definitely agreed to those issues. Now, that doesn't mean the governor agreed that they were good issues. He disagreed with that, but accepted them as part of the negotiation, just like we accepted $50 million towards early childhood money that we would have preferred to put on the formula, just like we agreed that we wouldn't change the buffer date because that's what the governor wanted, but we got a little bit of warning instead of the hammer down in the first 8 months, and just like we agreed to more spending than we thought we should have, and that was the give and take. Neither of us said we like these things, but we did agree to them, and it wasn't just the governor. He had people there as well when we made those decisions, and so I just wanted, for the record, clarify what actually happened.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Hortman, I have to take exception with some of the things that you said about the governor not coming to the table, or that we didn't invite the governor to the table. As you know, after we at some point we had to start putting the bills together if we were going to even attempt to make the legislative deadline. And at that time, we continued to work with the governor's agencies. They had input in the entire time. They did negotiate. We did make agreements on everything. As you know, the reason that we ended up going to special session, it took longer than we wanted. We felt we had agreement, but continuously we had additional requests from the governor's office, and we felt that they had signed off on all these bills. I personally was in the room for not every one of these agreements, but some of them were. I personally heard the governor agree to these things that he now wants to renege on, and that is not negotiating in good faith. Good faith is if I agree to give something up and you agree to give something up, and then once the deal is done, you don't renege on that. You don't say that this, I even though I signed that bill, I disagree with it now. We had to give something up, and the governor had to get something up, and his administration was involved the entire last weekend of session, up till the final minutes of legislative session. We made changes and concessions so that the governor would sign the bills, and that was clearly our understanding. We had no intention of trying to send, and we'd already sent a complete budget to the governor, and as you know, he vetoed it. Our intention was to get all of the bills signed. Our understanding was that if we made these concessions and the agreements, that he would sign the bills, that he would sign the tax bill as well. And so somehow the idea that we did not engage with the administration is wrong. You talked about keeping their word. Well, we did that. We felt we did that. We had to make, as Senator Gazelka said, we made concessions. I was in the room when we had the discussion about the driver's licenses myself. He agreed to that. I heard him with my own two ears. And for the governor now to somehow deny that he'd made that agreement, I understand he doesn't like it. We didn't like everything in the bills either. That's what you do when you negotiate. But we are not employees of the governor. We are a separate branch of the government. And if the government is supposed to be run where the governor gets to decide every single issue and every single bill, then there really is no need for the legislature. The job of the legislature is to pass bills. It's the job of the governor to decide whether he wants to veto them or not. But apparently this governor thinks that because somehow he doesn't agree with every single thing in every single bill, that somehow we have to go back to the negotiating table, and we are not doing our jobs properly because we didn't do everything exactly the way he said. I find that personally offensive as a legislator. I think that the Founding Fathers knew what they were talking about when they put in place three separate branches of government, and we need to remember that we are not employees of the governor. We are here to represent the people, to be the voice of the people. We put legislation on the governor's desk, and then he has to make a decision whether to sign the bills or veto the bills. And in each of these cases, he has signed the bills, and now is not the time to reopen those bills and undo what the governor just signed into law within the last few days. So, you know, really, Representative Hortman, in my view, we don't really have any other choice than to go forward and make sure that the governor doesn't disband the legislature and make this so that the state is just under his ultimate control.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, I would like to respond to a couple of things that were said, Mr. Chairman. You said the governor would have had the option of veto. And just a few moments ago, Senator Gazelka pointed out that we're in a really relatively short timeline with July 1st approaching us. And had he vetoed the bills, as you suggested, if he would have gone that route, we all know that there would have been a high risk of a government shutdown. And I think that's why the governor chose the route that that he did. But secondly, I am interested in a couple of things relative to the motion that is before us. One is, what is the anticipated cost? Are we just giving a blank check to the law firm? And then the other question is, we have in the resolution here a specific law firm, and I have no idea how that law firm was chosen. So I think if either of the two co-chairs could respond to the cost question, as well as the question of how the law firm was chosen. I don't know who they're affiliated with. I don't know if they're constitutional experts. I think there's some questions that members of this committee as well, or commission as well as the general public should know.
Senator Gazelka.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I'll just speak for the Senate side of this whole thing first. We got our nonpartisan staff involved right away, the same nonpartisan staff that was there when Democrats had the majority. So, you know, working well with both of us. I think they identified something like six possible firms that could work on it, made some recommendations that we should visit with the House about who they thought might best fit the needs that we have. Then we had that conversation with the House as well. I'm not sure exactly how it played out in the House. But in the end, there was agreement for the firm that we picked. But that's how it happened in the Senate. As far as the pay, I think I'll let the Speaker address that part.
Yeah, and I think that the process was the same for us. We got our nonpartisan staff involved and let them kind of talk us through what the process might be and who, you know, what law firms may have that sort of expertise, and quickly two or three names kind of boiled to the top. We reached out and talked to, actually they did, reached out and talked to those firms to find out if they were interested. There were a couple that were interested, and I think we chose the one that had the lowest price. This is not decided yet, because we have to reach an agreement with them and sign a contract with them. We will explore both a kind of a flat fee of covering this and an hourly fee. They have told us, the attorney Doug Kelly has told us that I think their normal rate is published publicly because of their work on other high-profile cases, namely the Petters case. Their rate is $650 per hour. He has agreed to take this case at half of that hourly rate, so that was lower than the other folks that we talked to, and we felt that was an acceptable number to complete this work. So we'll continue to negotiate and see if we can work out a flat fee, if that's possible, if we can identify what the scope of this case might be. But ultimately, I think they have been very reasonable, and I think they're capable and equipped to handle the case.
And
Representative Carlson,
another question of either of the co-chairs. When you were looking at the potential law firms, it was the minority party and either body consulted? You've made the point here earlier in the meeting that this was the legislature versus the administration. The legislature is made up of both Democrats and Republicans. Did you consult in the choice of law firm then, or your discussion just recently in terms of a flat fee and all of that with the minority party?
Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I believe this is correct. I had two calls into Senator Bach, neither of which were returned, but I know my chief of staff has been in contact with the minority chief of staff about what we're doing. I know they mentioned the final name, and I believe they were fine with that, but I'd rather have, you know, just so you know, as we're talking about it here, you know, I'd rather hear that directly from our chief of staff. But that's what I understand it to be.
And on the House side, Mr. Chairman,
I think the House has just the minority has just spoken that they're not in favor of hiring any attorney. So if I've misunderstood that, maybe it doesn't really matter who the attorney is.
Mr. Chairman, that kind of dodges the question. I understand what our thoughts are in terms of hiring an attorney right now, but being that you are going to hire one, my question was the minority caucus consulted at all? And I think by your kind of dodging the question, you're saying no.
We did not, but I also want to say this was not a partisan decision. This attorney is not a partisan attorney in any way, shape, or form. This was a recommendation that came from our nonpartisan staff, and I might add our very capable nonpartisan staff. And frankly, we have some of the best constitutional experts in the state that work here for us in the House, in the legislature as nonpartisan staff. And they work for Democrats when Democrats are in charge, and they work for Republicans when Republicans are in charge, and they don't show their partisan colors. And I believe they've given us very good advice on what maybe how to proceed to protect the legislature as an institution.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've been here a term or two, and I understand the role of the nonpartisan staff. And I'm not making the accusation one way or the other. I don't know enough about the Kelly law firm to even begin to make an accusation. But being that much of our discussion here and in the past few days has been about communication, I think it's important on an issue as important as this is that the minority parties be consulted as well, especially when you frame it that this is the House versus the administration. If you're going to frame it that way, that includes the minority party, and it's important whether we agree or not that they, at least we have input and are consulted in this kind of a decision. One other point, I would note,
Representative Carlson, that we have not adopted the amendment, so this is the appropriate place. If you have an objection to the resolution, this is the appropriate place to bring that forward. And we have not made a decision yet, and we cannot without adopting this resolution. So you are here. This is a public forum. We certainly invite you to, if you have information that this is not a good decision, believe me, I would welcome that. That information. So feel free to share that with all of us now.
Mr. Chairman, to the point.
Representative Carlson.
Okay. I'm talking about communication here. And you've brought forward a resolution, and the point has already been made that I think both of us on this end of the table can count. So I think the outcome is pretty well predetermined. But before the resolution was brought forward, my entire point is that there should have been better communication with the minority parties in both bodies. I'll accept the fact that Senator Gazalka said that he tried to contact Senator Bach and was not able to do so. I would compliment him if that was what his attempt was. But having said that, it appears that at least on the House side, there was no attempt to talk to the minority party about the selection of an attorney. And I'm just saying we need to have better communication. Speaking of communication, and I'll just make one final comment. One of the concerns that the governor raised was that he didn't have an opportunity to see these bills in final form until they were literally before the House of Representatives or the Senate, depending on whether it was a Senate file or a House file. And I know you were on a very fast time track, but I would think that inserting something as controversial as not funding the Department of Revenue without the governor having knowledge that that was in the bill, and that's what I understand one of his major concerns is, I think that that was on the part of the majority a real shortcoming. I think inserting new language like that without sharing the bill with the governor is what set the stage for this whole debate. The other thing I would say is that instead of immediately hiring outside counsel and, as I read the resolution, setting the stage for a court case, I think it would be far better in the interest of the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota for you to sit down with the governor, maybe even getting taking from labor management, getting a mediator to bring the two sides together to talk through these issues to see if they can be resolved. You know, when you go to the courts, there's a risk on both sides. You may not get the answer that you hope for, and that becomes a pretty permanent decision in terms of the future and constitutional interpretation. And I would caution doing this so rapidly and on the fly when you're dealing with a constitutional question of this magnitude, when there are alternatives sitting down, negotiating with the governor, even bringing in a mediator that could perhaps bring both sides together. I've been through the collective bargaining process for a relatively large union. I was on the union side of the table with the administration of the Minneapolis schools, one of the largest school districts in the state. And I understand how mediation works and what you can do through an agreement to mediate. That doesn't bind either side, but it assures that both sides would be talking, and that's the role of a mediator, as opposed to arbitration. Sometimes people get the two confused. But I think it's premature to go to outside counsel at this point with so many questions remaining unanswered. And that's it.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Carlson. Just to respond to a couple of your comments, you're talking about inserting language at the end is a blatant mischaracterization of what happened. The governor did have an opportunity to review that language. In fact, that bill was posted a full 39 hours before it was voted on. And just so you understand, too, and I think what has made this whole thing so confusing for those of us that were involved in the process directly, the final few days of the legislative session and the special session, when we were negotiating the final agreement on the bills with the governor, I think we all felt so good about the level of cooperation and really collaborative effort that went into coming up with the agreement on those bills. And I think the evidence of that is, and that the governor believed that as well, is that at 12:01, even though we didn't have final agreement on those bills, at 12:01 on the last night of session, after the last night of session, he immediately called a special session so that we could finish that good work that we were doing. And unfortunately, I think what's happening now is, the governor may have gotten pressure on the things that he negotiated. He may not like some of the things that he agreed to because of pressure from outside groups. I don't know exactly what's going on, but now the governor wants to change his mind and he doesn't want to follow through with things that he had agreed to. So saying the governor didn't see this language, he absolutely did. He had his constitutional right to veto those bills if he didn't like the language that was in them. He chose not to do that. He signed them. I can glean from that he agreed with those bills because he put his signature on those bills. I frankly think that in St. Paul, your word has to mean something. And I would love to sit down with the governor, but I will not sit down with the governor and renegotiate something he already agreed to. I would love to sit with him. I'll sit with him today. I'll sit with him tomorrow. I'll sit with him every day until we have this resolved. But I'm going to sit with him to work out how do we get back to what you agreed to. How do we set up a situation where you can keep your word, Governor? And I think that's the situation here. What we did is put language into a bill to ensure that if he did decide to veto the tax bill, which, by the way, he had agreed to the tax bill, if he did decide to veto that bill, which he did a year ago, when he vetoed the most bipartisan, broadly supported tax bill ever vetoed by a governor, and he did that after he said he supported it. So we felt it necessary that if he decided to veto a bill that he had agreed to, that if he decided to do that, there was some ramification, that he would be required to call us back. And that's the choice that he had to make. He got to choose whether he signed or vetoed the state government finance bill. He got to choose whether he signed or vetoed the tax bill. And he chose to sign those bills. That was his constitutional right to do one or the other. Where he violates the Constitution is by punitively, because he may not have liked the agreements that he made, line item vetoing the entire funding for the legislature, and not just us as members, but for our very capable nonpartisan staff. And think of the uncertainty for the staff and their families who now don't feel appreciated at all by our governor. I think it's incredibly unfortunate, especially when I look back at what was accomplished this session. The last 2 years were somewhat frustrating for me because we didn't get a transportation bill done, we didn't get a bonding bill done, and we didn't get a tax relief back in the pockets of Minnesotans. And I'm so proud that this year we accomplished all three of those things. We passed the largest tax relief bill in almost 20 years, very bipartisan. I think the majority of both caucuses in the House voted for it. We passed the largest transportation funding package that didn't include a gas tax or a tab fee increase in the state's history. There is a ton of money that's going to go into road and bridge infrastructure as a result of what happened on a bipartisan basis. And we passed a large bonding bill to invest in much-needed infrastructure upgrades across the state. And we did it on a bipartisan basis. And we did that with the governor. He was part of all of that. We couldn't have done that alone, and he couldn't have done it alone without us. So it's incredibly frustrating that now the governor's choosing to put a sour note at the end of what I think history will view as an incredibly successful and productive session. Trying to just completely eliminate somebody you disagree with isn't the best way of approaching things. It would be better if the governor would actually just, if he didn't like these things, he shouldn't have agreed to them. If he didn't like them, he shouldn't have signed the bills. That was his opportunity, according to the Constitution, to stop that. He chose to sign the bills. He chose to exercise his constitutional right to sign those bills into law. And where he violates the Constitution is he chose to eliminate completely the funding for the legislature. And I believe, and I don't know if you're going to vote today to stick up for the families and the nonpartisan employees that work for us here at the House, but I'm going to. Because I believe what the governor is doing is such a blatant violation of our Constitution, and I'm going to stand up for the people that work so hard for us here at the House and make sure that we do the best job together that we can do to give a product to Minnesotans. And without those people, this would not have been a successful session. But it was a successful session because of the hard work of all of those people that work for us at the House and at the Senate. And I'm going to vote today to stand up for those people, and I hope that you join me.
Mr. Chairman,
I've got about three more people on the list. So, Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I find it kind of ironic we're here talking about this when this was the art of negotiation. This was what we call compromise. We've heard so many times out in our districts, you folks need to compromise. And I felt this year was a good example of compromise. We got the governor and his office and staff involved. We had our leadership involved. And these bills were worked through the process with compromise and got passed. And now somebody's upset because they're getting pressure for some of the things they compromised on. So now we want to come back and revisit these. So if we're going to come back and revisit those five items, what are the other items we're going to have to come back and revisit? Anytime you have compromise, both parties are going to leave unhappy. And if they both leave unhappy, you probably did a pretty good job of compromise. When one party's smiling, the other is not, you probably didn't have very good compromise. And I think we had some good compromise, so I'm surprised we're even here having this discussion. And I think we need to move forward with this discussion and hire these attorneys, because it's obvious that the compromise didn't mean much, and we want to go back and discuss issues that maybe there's some pressure points on. And I just think that that's not going to work.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, you've got several good talking points that you like to use, and I've heard them before. But my earlier comments are trying to move beyond the talking points when I said that it was important, in my view, that you sit down and you talk with the governor to see if you can work these issues out before you jump with both feet into making a commitment to file a court case and all the costs that are inherent in that. And assuming that you're going to prevail simply because you feel right is on your side. When I mentioned collective bargaining, usually when people are at the bargaining table, both sides feel that right is on their side. And so that's what needs to be resolved now. And I think we've got to get beyond, Mr. Chairman, the talking points. And your talking points were rather repetitive this morning or this afternoon. From what you've said before, and I said with this committee meeting, we should be trying to see how we can resolve the issues in a way that creates a win-win for both sides. And as I said earlier, going to court, you don't know what the outcome is going to be. So assuming that right is on your side may be an incorrect assumption. That's why I indicated a good approach might be mediation to bring the two sides together. to begin to talk to see if you can work out these issues.
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Speaker, I just find it ironic that you're willing to put the paychecks of 1,300 employees of the Minnesota Department of Revenue at risk and or shut down the entire state government, and now you're gravely offended that the continued paychecks of 500 legislative employees are on the line. It's a tactic that you brought into the legislative negotiations, and I don't think you should be surprised it's now been turned on you. The other thing is, you know, you can talk about people honoring their agreements all you want, but you signed an agreement to adjourn the special session at 7 a.m. You told the governor and you told all of the media that if we weren't done by then, we would go back in with the governor and we would negotiate a second agreement, and you broke your word.
Just in response to a couple of those things, and I appreciate, Representative Carlson, your desire not to dwell in how we got here, but how to move forward. And I know that you want us to sit and come to an agreement, but I'll remind you, and I apologize if you feel like my repeating the facts of the situation sound like talking points, but I feel like it's important that people do understand what the facts are. And we did sit with the governor. We came to agreement on these specific issues, and he agreed to them. So we have done exactly what you want. We have sat with the governor. We have agreed to these things, and he agreed. I appreciate, I understand the governor was on the radio this morning just prior to me being on the radio, and I didn't hear all of his interview, but he did apparently say that he does remember agreeing to some of those things and wasn't sure if he had agreed to all of them. I can assure you he did agree personally to all of them, and they wouldn't have been in the bills if he hadn't agreed to them. So, you know, I feel like the time to live up to your word is now, and the governor needs to live up to the agreement and the word that he made. And if I'm going to be the only person, I'm going to hold the governor accountable. And I hope that there will be others who will join me in holding the governor accountable to the agreements that he made. As far as the paychecks of 1,300 employees at revenue, I voted to fund those paychecks. You voted to fund those paychecks. I hope you did. Maybe you didn't. I can look back. But we voted to fund those paychecks, and the governor signed a bill that gave those paychecks full funding. So the governor has exercised his constitutional right to either veto or sign these bills. He has signed them. He lived up to that part of the agreement. Where he has violated the agreement is he is line item vetoed the legislative funding, and that's why we're here today. This isn't about those five issues. This is about whether or not we're going to allow the governor of the state of Minnesota to silence the voice of 5 million Minnesotans here at the Minnesota State Capitol. I personally represent 39,500 people who expect me to come here and advocate on their behalf, and I do that very proudly. And I know that every other member of the legislature does that as well. And I know that people in my district aren't happy with the behavior of the governor right now. And I wonder if the governor doesn't regret what he's doing, but ultimately, you know, he's chosen to take this course. And I know there have been governors in the past that have rescinded vetoes within that window. I hope that the governor will consider to do that, because I think that's probably the easiest way out of this. That would be the governor's way of living up to the agreements that he had made. If he chooses not to do that, you know, we certainly need to exercise whatever we can to protect those people's voice here at the Capitol. So, any other comments or discussion? Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out a couple things as well. Again, we did vote to pay all the employees across the state. I voted for every one of those bills that funded all the employees, as did, I know, my colleagues up here as well. And if the governor truly intended to sign the tax bill in good faith, as he negotiated, as we felt we were negotiating in good faith, there's no reason he should have been upset about that language, because he would have signed both bills and everybody would have gotten funded. So it's interesting that even angered him, because as far as we know, it was his intention to sign both of those bills. I will also point out regarding the language that the commissioner himself had the language almost two full days in advance, 43 hours in advance. It was given personally to the commissioner of MMB for his review, and it was in every single document that exchanged all the negotiations back and forth, every single change that was made. The language was in there and was available for almost 2 full days. So to somehow insinuate that it was snuck in at the last second is just simply unfair. And I agree with the Speaker and the Majority Leader in the Senate that this is highly important, and I think that we need to make a stand that we are not employees of the governor, that the legislative branch is a separate branch of government. We are the voice of the people, and because of that, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. Any further discussion on the resolution? Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Dowd?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
No.
Representative Hoppe?
Aye.
Representative Hortman?
No.
Representative Keel?
Aye.
Representative Pepin?
Aye.
Senator Benson?
Aye.
Senator Dames?
Aye.
Senator Gazelka?
Aye.
7 ayes and 2.
The motion prevails. Mr. Hubinger, is there any other business that needs to come before the LCC? Very good. Well, thank you, members, and we'll post our next meeting when we need to. This meeting of the LCC is adjourned.